Hello everybody, hope you have a beautiful day. As I said last week, today we upload the second episode I recorded with Dangerous, primarily talking about Super Mario Odyssey and its speedrun. He is a very experienced speedrunner of this game. He creates a lot of tutorials about this game that are very useful, so if you want to learn more about this game beyond this podcast episode, go check out his YouTube. I will link it wherever I can, so just search the description. Anyways, now, this episode was as great as last week's episode. I would recommend to also listen to last week's episode. Some things we mentioned in this episode were mentioned in last week's episode. But besides that, now, I can only let you enjoy the episode, so have fun with it. Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another podcast, Speedrun Education Podcast episode. I have Dangerous again with me. We just recorded the first episode of with him, and now we record the second episode. Dangerous, introduce yourself a second time, please.
How's it going, everybody? My name is Dangerous. I'm a Super Mario Odyssey speedrunner. I'm streaming my attempts and stuff live to twitch.tv/Dangerous, and that's kind of what I'm all about, you know? And, you know, involving the community into the what I enjoy, you know, the passion of speedrunning, so...
So, this episode is, other than the previous one, we talked more about general advice and how to become better at as a speedrunner. This time we talk about SMO, Super Mario Odyssey, specifically. And before we can even, like, talk about the speedrun, for the few people who don't know what Super Mario Odyssey is, let's explain Super Mario Odyssey as a game and as a speedrun, first of all.
Sure. So, Super Mario Odyssey came out in 2017. It's Nintendo's most, as of this recording anyway, most recent 3D Mario game. Very similar in vein to the 3D Mario games of the past, you know, Galaxy and 64, where Mario is traversing these sandbox type levels and collecting a bunch of moons. And you, this time you have your partner, his name is Cappy. Cappy sits on Mario's head, you throw him out, you can use Cappy to capture enemies, which is really cool. So there's a bunch of enemies in the game that you can actually use special abilities with, like bullet bills. You can like zoom across the stage, cheap cheeps, you can swim in water faster. But you can also use Cappy as a bit of a platforming tool. So you can use Cappy to bounce off of and traverse the stages a little bit easier. If you accidentally like jump too far off of a ledge, you can throw Cappy back and like dive back to the platform to save yourself. Like, momentum is very flexible in this game because you can throw your cap and change your momentum in a bunch of different directions.
So. Yeah, even in a casual playthrough, there's a lot of room you can work with if you're in the air. In previous games, you couldn't. You fell off, you die, or you fall to the very bottom of the level.
It's true. Cappy gets compared to Flood a little bit because Flood also has that kind of like yikes mechanic where you can just hover nozzle and you might be able to save yourself, but Cappy's a little bit more versatile in my opinion.
Yeah, a lot, a much more fast pace. I think that's like one reason why SMO can look a lot more flashier, even though we gotta admit Super Mario Sunshine also looks very flashy on the highest level, without a doubt. But yeah, how did you, as a speedrunner, you've speedrun like since 2009, or that was when you first started speedrunning, as we learned in the previous episode. How did you find your way into Super Mario Odyssey? As for someone who maybe is wondering, how do you get into this all into the speedrun thing in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of an accident. Like the reason that I stumbled into speedrunning again for I think what would have been like the third or fourth time was just pure circumstance. It's one of those like fate kind of put you in the right place types of things. I'd been working in restaurants for about 8 years. I got put out of work for 2 weeks for an emergency surgery, and I had to fill my time with something. And I just kind of I was reminded of speed running. I don't remember why. I think I was on YouTube and I was seeing summoning salt videos about world record progressions, and I saw the one about Super Mario World, and it kind of brought me back to, you know, when I used to do that as well. And so I was like, maybe this is still a thing. And this was in like April or March. No, it was in April of 2018. And I just kind of stumbled my way over to Twitch to see if this was something that was going on. And Super Mario Odyssey was the newest game. It was only out for about 5 or 6 months at that point. So checked it out, was kind of curious about it. And sure enough, yeah, there's this huge community dedicated to speedrunning this game. Find Nycro Vita's channel, who at the time had the world record, and it was like a high 103, like a 103.47 or something like that. And there he is. He's, you know, he's doing this thing. He's like, he's speedrunning the way that I had before. And I was like, okay, well, this is a thing. And, you know, I'm watching him and I'm thinking, you know, I could probably do that. So you boot up Super Mario Odyssey and you start playing through the game and you realize, well, this is a little harder than it looks. But I'm sure that as I develop myself into the controls a little bit more, then it'll kind of string itself together. And I guess, you know, it was only 2 weeks out of work, but the rest is history now. So I'm here not working in kitchens anymore. So
yeah,
must have done something. It must have stuck.
Especially at the time when SMO came out, also like games like Celeste came out, the entire speedrun, like at that time I was not speedrunning a game myself, but I was looking at speedrun.com and every now and then, and I just saw the activity number on these two games like exploded so much. It's like, it was kind of crazy that like two really, really good speedruns got released at the same time, basically. I think SMO is still like one of the most popular speedruns right now on speedrun.com. So, before we go more into the speedrun itself, how to become good or learn that speedrun, why is SMO so popular? We talked already partly about it, but what makes it, for example, more popular than Sunshine or the Galaxy games or any other game genre?
I think that is a good question. I think Nintendo in particular makes wonderful speedrun games, so we'll start there.
Okay.
Nintendo as a brand is just like banging out speedrun titles that are just perfect. Like when I used to play Super Mario World, there were sometimes levels where I was like, this was made to hold right and jump. Like if you know what you're doing, if you've seen this level before, you can run and jump through this level perfectly, flawlessly. Like there's no accident here. Like, I don't know if you know the levels in Super Mario World very well, but
I play
Yoshi's Island. Okay, great. Yoshi's Island 3. It's a very vertical stage. It's got those platforms that kind of like spin around like this. The casual way to do it is to like climb this set of stairs at the very beginning, but there's an information block right at the beginning as well. And if you run and you jump, you can keep your P speed all the way through the level. I don't think that's an accident. I think that was put there on purpose. Like Nintendo isn't involved in speedrunning communities and even sometimes like slaps speedrun communities in the face, but they make games that are so well catered to the speedrun idea. And so that's why Nintendo games are so popular, is because in one way or another, they're instant classics just on their own right, but they also have these mechanics built into them kind of by accident that just make them so unique and like amazing for speedrunning in the first place. And when you look at Odyssey specifically, I think that Odyssey versus Super Mario 64, you've got a game that's pretty similar there. I think that Super Mario 64 is very approachable because the ideas and the concepts are very similar. The controls are easy to understand. You play the game, you collect the stars, you get enough stars, you beat the game. Odyssey is very similar to that, right? Except it's a little bit more linear, where you have to go through every single level. But that's not a big problem because you can choose which moons out of the level you want to get to the end of the level, right? So there is still flexibility in it. I think it's even more popular because, first of all, it's new. So a lot of kids recognize the Nintendo Switch as the console that they play. It's not something that they need to have nostalgia for because it is new, as well as the fact that it's a little bit more like fast-paced compared to Super Mario games of the past. I think Super Mario 64 definitely has like, it sits right in the golden era of video games. The N64 is like the perfect mash of like relatable for people who didn't grow up with it and also nostalgic for people who did. So that's why like Zelda Ocarina of Time and Super Mario 64 are some of the most popular speedrun games in my opinion, is because of that. Whereas Odyssey doesn't really have that nostalgia, but it does follow the same thing, but it also has its own pacing. And like when you compare Odyssey to Galaxy is not necessarily a game that aged well in a speedrunning sense because it's slow.
Yeah.
Like every star you collect, you got a star. Then you go to the observatory and then it says, oh, look at how many coins you got. Look how many star bits you got. You collected another star. Ting. Would you like to save the game? All right. Then you finally get to pick the next level. You know what I mean? Like there's so much downtime for every like 2 minutes of gameplay collecting a star. There's probably another like 30 seconds of downtime. It's too slow. Whereas the Odyssey is kind of broken up a little bit more fast paced, I guess.
Yeah.
You go into a level. There's probably 30 seconds of downtime to get from one level to the next. But once you're in that level, there's no stopping until you're done. And then it's the way that it's paced is just much smoother, It's such a free-flowing game. And I think that it also owes a little bit of its popularity to its approachability. We were mentioning how Cappy can save you in situations and stuff, right? It's not a hard game. Like, I think that anybody who has ever played it before could pick up the game right this second, like my mom even, could probably pick up the game right this second. And if I told them, you don't leave that couch until you beat the game, she'd have it done in like 3 hours, like probably. You know what I mean? It's not a hard game. Mm-hmm. All things considered, it is probably one of the easier games out there, but it's very tempting because, you know, you look at the players at the very top and you're like, that doesn't look easy at all. It's not. It's just that there's a very easy learning curve and difficulty master at the top, right?
The learning curve was something I actually want to talk about, because I think that's what makes it a good speedrun, or for example, makes Celeste also a good speedrun. Both of the games have a really high skill ceiling. Like, you can put so much time into it, into specific movement tricks, and you can make stuff perfect that looked like impossible beforehand, and you can optimize like seconds or frames. But the beginning is not so hard that you need like to learn a specific glitch or trick that is extremely hard, or the movement in general feels like very natural, free flowing. I think that's like really, really important for a speed game to be good or be popular, having a good learning curve and like difficulty curve. I think the game becomes probably really hard once you want to get to sub 1 hour or something. I can surely see the game being really difficult on top of being like a 3D game where you need to control so many angles. It's like probably really, really difficult, a lot more difficult than Celeste in that regard, I think.
I think so too. And I actually have an example for you. So compare Super Mario Odyssey to Breath of the Wild. Breath of the Wild is a very attractive speedrun game to watch, mm-hmm. because, you know, just like any Zelda game, it's broken as hell. But, like, if you want to get into the any percent category of Super Mario Odyssey, you just need a controller and a little bit of patience, and you've done it. If you want to get into the any percent category of Breath of the Wild, it's not so simple as that.
Yeah.
Like, even if you don't do the bullet time bounces, you still need to figure out a way to get from the plateau to the castle without dying to all of the really big, scary, like, guardians outside.
Yeah.
You need to find a way into the castle.
And to beat the boss and all the enemies.
You need to beat all four Blights and Ganon on 3 hearts and 1, like, stamina potion, and that is it.
Yeah.
That is not an easy difficulty curve at all.
True. Like, when I was playing Breath of the Wild casually, like, I had struggled with some of the boss fights, like, with, like, 15 hearts or something. I died to them a few times, or needed to use all my healing items. I don't know how speedrunners do that. And it's like, it's so important to have a easy or a low frustration range for newcomers, because I think that's one thing that keeps people away from speedrunning. Oh, it's too hard, it's too difficult. But really, for the most part, some games have really easy routes or easy ways to get into them.
It's as difficult as you make it, really.
Yeah, like all the other like Zelda games, there are let's say Wind Waker world record route is like broken as hell, and all the tricks you need to do, you need to practice them for a really long time to pull them off consistently.
Yep.
But if you look into it and ask the community for a beginner guide with a beginner route with only like beginner friendly tricks and glitches, you still feel like you break the game or you do something amazing, but it's not that hard and not that frustrating. That's really important. And yeah, I think you made a good point that's probably the reason why SMO is so accessible and why people are speedrunning it so much. Okay, yeah, we already talked about it, but I still want to ask it for the sake of asking it. Like, what else?
Sure.
We had already talked about the easy difficulty curve or the good difficulty curve. What else should people expect when they want to get into SMO? Like, what is going to be, like, really hard, really easy? What is their speedrun going to look like? What is their learning experience going to look like? Because I personally was, before I speedrun Celeste, I was also interested in speedrunning SMO or Breath of the Wild. So yeah, just tell me what would my learning experience look like?
I think that the learning experience of one speed game can kind of mirror the learning experience of any, truly, if you're just kind of breaking it down into like an instruction manual, bare bones basics. But I guess with Odyssey specifically, you know, like I said, very easy to get into. So your beginning experience is mostly going to be catered around learning the controls, learning what you're capable of doing with your combinations and what you're not. Like, some of the easiest beginner mistakes, for example, are like, you can do a cap bounce. If you jump and you dive onto Cappy, you can do a cap bounce, but you can only do one. You can't do a cap bounce if you've just done a wall jump, for example. That's one that trips people up at the beginning because they're like, why didn't I get my cap bounce? I only jumped once. You can't do it after a wall jump. You know, it's the beginning experience is all about learning what your limitations are with your moveset, figuring out what you can do with the combinations of platforming skills that you have, as well as just learning the game, you know, memorizing the path, I guess. In any percent, that's not too hard because it's 124 moons, but you're kind of just like, you're going through the level in one specific way. You know, your beginning experience is learning the route and learning your moveset and trying to basically put it into muscle memory, into second nature, and learning how to do that. And then you might see a couple of neat little tricks that you might be able to get, but those are going to come to you naturally as you get better at platforming, right? And it's like, platforming in itself is a skill. So in order to do something like left side, which is what most people see when they first watch Super Mario Odyssey speedruns, it's like, oh, you can go up the left side of the tower instead of the right side. Mm-hmm. That's actually harder than it looks. You know, you need to have a very good understanding of how high Mario jumps and when he gets to that height in order to make that jump in the first place, right? So I think that, you know, speaking to a beginner, you shouldn't go for that kind of stuff right away. Like, take the casual approach. You are a casual at the beginning. Don't be afraid to be a casual for a little while. Like, you kind of have to learn your limitations. And, you know, as you get better at the movement, then you can start to incorporate things that use that movement. And then maybe you're watching somebody around your skill level, maybe a little bit higher. So you can see what they're doing that's different from you. Maybe you notice something catches your eye that they're doing, like, ooh, I want to do that. So dedicate some practice time to doing that. And then, you know, your skill set increases a little bit. And then you add traits that match that. And then you learn some more stuff and your skill level increases. And like, it's always like, even me at this level is still, you know, I'm still learning stuff. I look up to Tyrone and I look up to Mitch at the top of the Any% leaderboards, and they like do wizardry with what they do. They're robots.
Yeah.
Still trying to like...
Yeah, top level speedrun is always a magic show to some regard. If you have never seen something, you get always surprised.
Exactly. So even me, not quite there yet, you know, there's always improvements to do. And those guys, funny thing is that they're not at the top of their game either. That's the thing, is like, speedrunning is always a, you know, you have the passion to keep improving yourself because there's always limitations that are above you, right? Even Cosmic in Super Mario Brothers, like, yes, he has the world record, and yes, it's like less than a second off of task, but even he knows that there's stuff that he can do to be better. It's crazy. True. It's crazy how that works.
True. Yeah. But one thing you said really catch my attention is like, especially in SMO, I think, when you get the freedom to implement stuff on your own pace, use that freedom. The game gives you the opportunity to learn like the easy tricks in the beginning or just the basic movement, and then you can start implementing tricks. Yep. I see so many people in Celeste, sorry that I reference to that so often, but it's my game, that are like, you know, trying to pull off that really hard stretch. I didn't pull off till like was at that time, and they like feel stuck on that for so long. Like, use your time on something else and move. Like, you get surprised. Let's say you practice like 10 hours something different, something easy, something different. You play the game, you do your full runs, and then when you practice that really hard thing, you now do it like it feels a lot easier. It feels like I had one strat I didn't learn for so long. It was like in a beginner tutorial, but I had a problem with it. I couldn't do it. And then after I was at like sub 40, I tried to implement that strat, and it was like second nature to me. I didn't even need to look into the tutorial anymore. I just remembered, oh, you need to do this and that, and boom, all of a sudden it happened for me. So use that freedom you get for like learn stuff on your own pace yourself well, and you will get, first of all, much more enjoyment out of speedrunning, but improvement feels much more natural and straightforward, and that's like a really cool, awesome feeling. Like,
even if you
PB only by like a few seconds every now and then, be happy that you can improve every now and then for little effort, because there will be a time where you need to put a lot of time into to improve for like 1 second. And then you're happy to be at the beginning and like, oh, I just need to play the game and then I improve by 10 seconds the next week. It's like, it's kind of crazy.
That's why I play different categories, just so that you can kind of relive that beginner experience a little bit.
Categories, I actually want to talk about them.
Excellent, yes.
Go right ahead about categories, because SMO has a lot of categories and we already talked about it. It's like a blessing for the game. Go ahead.
Every speedrun game has different categories, and I think that it's a refreshing way to experience the game. I think 80% is the place that you need to start because it's the most approachable. It's the shortest, aside from category extensions, but I'll talk about that in a second. And we were talking about, you know, developing your moveset, right? I think SMO is approachable because you don't need advanced movement at all to beat the game. We're saying it's an easy game. It is an easy game. I didn't actually know how to cap bounce until I started speedrunning the game. I had beat it 100% casually before. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to cap bounce until I started speedrunning in April. I had the game in November, right? So like you can beat this game very easily, and any percent doesn't need to follow the advanced route. There's lots of resources for a beginner route in any percent. But you know, if you get a little bit frustrated with any percent or you have watched other categories, you might be inclined to try them. So the SMO categories on the main board are broken up basically into how far into the game you beat, essentially. So any percent and world peace. World peace is like the next longest one. It's about 14 minutes longer. It is any percent, except you're also beating the story purposefully. Yeah. So every kingdom that you go to has kind of a main obstacle or a main objective going on there. Like in Sand Kingdom, it's all frozen over and there's Nuklotek hiding in the ice cave down below, and you have to go beat him up to bring peace to that kingdom, and it mm-hmm. enters a whole new phase. It's not frozen over anymore. Everybody's happy and joyous and whatever. In Metro Kingdom, for example, like you get there and the Mecha Wiggler's there and he's bad, and you might think that that's world peace, but it's not. Pauline needs to throw a festival for you to celebrate the fact that you saved them. After you beat the festival, changes the scene of the kingdom, world peace restored, right? So that's world peace, is like completing all of those objectives. And there are some sequence breaks in there too, which makes that category really fun.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so like snow and sand specifically, you don't actually have to do every single story moon along the way. You can kind of skip to the end of their stories, which is really cool.
Interesting.
Dark side. If you're not familiar with Odyssey, there are three bonus kingdoms at the end of the game. Once you beat the main story, there's three bonus kingdoms. The first one, it spits you out into right away, Mushroom Kingdom. And it's kind of the nostalgia wonderland. It's like basically you're just like you're in Super Mario 64 again all of a sudden. It's got a kingdom, you know, that's one kingdom. But then there are two others. Once you collect 250 power moons, you unlock what's called the Dark Side of the Moon. And that is what this category is about. So you basically just need to do a speed run where you collect 250 moons as fast as you can, as well as beat the main story to unlock this Dark Side of the Moon kingdom. You go to the dark side. There's a boss gauntlet where you fight all of the Brutals again, as well as the Robo Brutal, but with moon physics this time. And then you get a multi-moon. So there's that category. Then there's Darker Side, which is collecting 500 power moons to unlock a secondary extra kingdom called the Darker Side of the Moon. And this one's kind of like in vain with like the perfect run. Mm-hmm. If you're familiar with Galaxy 2, a lot of Mario games of the past like 10, 15 years have had like a hardest platforming level
at the end.
Yeah, that's what Darker Side is. So that's what that speedrun is. Collect 500 power moons, get to the Darker Side. And then there's an all moons category. So all of the moons in the game equal 880 unique power moons. I say unique because
That's weird. I didn't understand that when I was looking into SMO.
Yeah, so you can actually go to any shop in the game after you beat the main story. You can go into the shop again and buy another moon and just buy duplicates of the same moon, but they only count for one thing on your like moon list, right? Like it'll tell you how many times you bought it, but it'll only count for one moon. All moons is like collecting all of the unique ones.
Okay.
And once you've done that, your Odyssey balloon turns golden and you unlock a harder version of the Bowser fight from the end of the game. It's not really that hard. It's just a couple extra tail swishes, but but that's all moons. And then 100% is exactly what it sounds like, with the exception of like downloadable content and any online content. You're just looking to buy all the outfits from the shops, all the souvenirs. You're getting all the purple coins. You're getting all the music tracks. You're getting all the captures. You're getting all of the moons. And the reward for that is a little star in your profile. So that is the main board. And that kind of encompasses everything from the shortest to the longest that Odyssey has to offer. But, you know, if you're a devout speedrunner and you put thousands of hours into a game, sometimes you get a little bit bored with the idea of just beating the game in a traditional sense. Sometimes you want to do secondary accomplishments. So that's where the category extensions leaderboard comes in. And because this community is so big and so diverse, and the game itself is a bit of a collectathon, like there's so many different things that you can collect and do in the game. The category extensions leaderboard has like a million things on it, like all purple coins, all captures, all music, like breaking 100% down into like the components that make up 100%, but only focusing on the one thing. There's a lot of category extensions for that. There's also category extensions for getting to darker side or dark side in specific ways, like we mentioned the duplicate moons that you can buy from the shop. Typically, those aren't allowed in speedruns because they kind of dilute the experience a little bit. You know, it's not fun if you like are just using a bunch of coins to pay for 50 moons at the end. But yeah, it is an option. So that's a category extension, like getting to dark side with duplicate moons, right?
That sounds kind of silly, to be honest, that it has to be an its own category, but okay.
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. The fact that there are like these little hint arts in the ground that give you 200 coins makes the routing a little bit different and makes it 15 minutes faster for darker side, right? So
that's there is some a lot, value. To be honest.
It is a lot, right? It is a lot. And there's no coin grinding either. So like that's coin grinding good. Is the thing you have to do in 100% because you need all of the outfits and stuff. But in these like duplicate categories, no coin grinding. So they're actually kind of fun. What else do they have for category extensions? Dude, there's everything. Nipple percent is the one that everybody knows the most.
Yeah. I watched your speedrun, I think, 2 days ago or 3 days ago.
Oh gosh, yeah. That in itself has two different subcategories, and it comes down to like the history of the game. Those Luigi hint arts that I mentioned just a second ago, they didn't always used to exist in the game, and nipple percent is like the oldest category extension. It's been around since the game came out. Like as soon as we found out that Mario's nipples were in the video game, we were like, we need to make a speedrun about that.
Oh god.
So traditionally what you used to have to do is you just have to collect coins as fast as you can in like a traditional sense. But then when the hint arts started coming out, it made it easier to get to 1,000 coins to buy the boxers, right? So it split off into two subcategories. And the one that you saw me get the world record in, that one is the traditional one, the no hint art category. But there is one that also allows for hint arts as well. Completely different routes, by the way. Just to whip out your nipples in like 10 minutes or so. So and it's, you know, it ranges from like, you know, secondary achievements, purple coins and stuff, to completely arbitrary nonsense that's just fun as a meme, like nipple percent, right? But it's different. It's opening up the game in ways that makes it more, you know, fun, I guess. It's adding more challenges to the speedrunning elements that we already have, I guess.
Yeah.
So
wow, you just, I don't know, I think you talk 5 to 10 minutes about just category extensions that shows that there's so
there's
much.
So many of them. And it's, I think, so easy.
I think we need to tell the people that, like, because of those category extensions, you can be so flexible if you want to speedrun this game. Dangerous told it in the last episode already that when you feel bored or you feel like you hit a plateau on one of the categories, then just move on to another one you find fun or interesting, and then you can improve as a whole runner of the game by a whole lot more. If you want to listen to that story, then go check out the previous episode. And I think, yeah, I was always shy to learn like other categories in Celeste for whatever reason, but I think I definitely should do it once I get back into Celeste and more. Do you still hear me?
Oh, nope, we lost you.
Am I here again?
Oh, nope. Are you back? Hello. Yes. Hi.
Okay.
I think you just stuttered for a second there, but
yeah, my PC stuttered. I don't know. Maybe he's overheating, or I don't know. It shouldn't happen. Let's get this episode finished. But yeah, you talked about no. I want to. I was always shy to learn like other categories in Celeste, for example. But maybe once I get back to that game, I should learn other categories, because you told us such a positive story. I feel like I need that, like, different categories to improve as a whole in Celeste a lot easier or a lot better. So yeah, if you If you are bored with any percent or whatever category you're running, encourage yourself to run another category. Dangerous has only positive experience with that.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like picking up a new speed game in general.
Yeah.
It's like you look at it, except with the bonus caveat of like completely cutting out that beginner section where you have to learn your controls.
Yeah.
Right? Because that part kind of sucks. Like, it's not the funnest thing in the world. It's kind of necessary. But if you're just hopping from one category to the next, you already know how to move Mario. It's just learning a different path, essentially, which is very approachable. And then you get to go through all the beginner motions of like PBing really easily again, and, you know, learning something new and learning new tricks and stuff like that. It just kind of opens up the experience again. So,
yeah. So that can help you avoiding frustration points, or like when you feel like you can't improve anymore. Just try to improve in another category, and you will be surprised how much you improve on your main category by just doing that.
Just overall.
And speaking of frustration points, because when I look at a SMO speedrun as it is right now, and I think about maybe I want to learn it or not, I think about like two boss fights, which one is the Mecha Wiggler in New Donk City, which is probably the most tedious part of the entire run, because it feels like is it even random or not? I don't know. It looks so random. It feels so slow to do compared to the rest in the game. I talked with a good friend of mine, and he was like, SMO is such a perfect speedrun, but then there's this Wiggler fight in the middle, which if it would be not in the game, the speedrun would be so much better. And then I personally look at the boss fight in Bowser Kingdom with the big mecha bunny thingy cyborg. And I look at that boss fight, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to speedrun this game seriously, if I'm able to endure this boss fight with like patience and love and enjoyment. So I'm like, this boss fight looks so stupid, and you can make so many weird mistakes. I don't know if I want to get myself through that. So how, like, do you need to enjoy every part of the speedrun? That's like my question here. Do you need to enjoy every part of a speedrun, and how do you overcome like parts you maybe dislike?
It's curious that you picked out those two things in particular. I think that as you get into the speedrun for Odyssey, the Robo Brutal that you're talking about at the very end ends up being like one of the like kind of the dramatic points of the speedrun, because it's so close to the end. But to answer your question, no, you don't have to love every part of the speedrun. The Mecha Wiggler that you mentioned is RNG, but only in the second phase. So the first phase will always look the same. He'll always take the same path to like dart through the walls. But then the second phase, he'll give you like one of a dozen patterns where he runs along the wall.
Okay.
You have to deal with some really nasty hitboxes, because you'll shoot one orb and it'll blow up the ones next to it. But if they overlap, the game has a hard time comprehending which one you hit sometimes. Okay. And you'll just get completely destroyed. You're trying to go for that two cycle. And sometimes at the beginner level, especially, you just kind of miss out on that. That can be a little bit frustrating, but yeah, you don't have to love every part of it. But realizing that the more you play, the easier it is to overcome those things that you don't like tends to be the driving force behind getting through it. And another part that most people don't like about the speedrun that you didn't mention, but I think it's worth mentioning, is the ruined boss fight. The ruined dragon is very intimidating looking, but is literally just the most boring part of the whole speedrun, because it is an auto scroller. It goes exactly the same way. The only thing you need to worry about is maybe not dying on the last phase, but you're taking intentional damage. You're pulling the swords as fast as you can. It's really hard to mess up. Like, it's 3 minutes of every single Super Mario Odyssey speedrun that nobody can avoid. It's just there. And I think that you kind of have to just look at those things with a little bit of positivity. You have to take them for what they are. Like, I mean, if you look at Galaxy, for example, they just have that every 15 seconds. So like, obviously they've overcome the crappy parts of the speedrun to just enjoy the game for what it is anyways. So for Odyssey, for example, like I look at the ruined boss fight, like, yeah, it's boring and it's kind of monotonous, but it also precedes the last 10 minutes of the speedrun, which gives you mental time to kind of like calm yourself down. You realize you're on pace for a PB, gives you a moment to just relax a little bit before you go into like the last push of your speedrun. So just like, if there's something about it that you don't like, if it's because it's boring, you know, take it for what it is. If it's because it's difficult or it's random, you know, there's a lot more satisfaction in overcoming that when you finally do, because you know, you can't enjoy every part of everything, right? It's not all of it's going to be really fun, but there is, you got to look at the silver lining of those kinds of things as well, because it's not all bad, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Seeing the positive, like what you just said, that's like, for Ruined Kingdom, that you just have like a little downtime for yourself can really help. Like, people underestimate how helpful a downtime can be in a speedrun. It's like, sometimes you just need to breathe and calm yourself down. Like, I'm getting nervous towards the end of all my speedruns when I'm on a good pace. So it can definitely help. I can see that being a helpful thing. Okay, I have two more questions, so let's get them down real quick.
Sure.
One thing at every speedrun happens is like jumping from like, I want to say, skill level to one or the other. Like, let's say you get a good, like, what is a good basic time in SMO for you?
I think 110 is the time that everybody kind of unanimously agrees is the, oh crap, this guy's taking this game seriously.
Okay.
That's the time, is like a 110.
Okay, and what, let's say you might have moved from that to like the next skill level, which I don't know, 105 or whatever. Like, this progress, like jumping from skill level to skill level, can be, is like the part where people need to, like, I feel like, change something in their gameplay, how they approach the speedrun, because it always gets like more advanced and you need to look into more like specific minor stuff you wouldn't have bothered in the beginning. So
yep.
how do you do this, especially with SMO, because like it's a barrier most people have a problem with. So let's answer the question, how do you overcome that problem? Like,
yeah, I think it is a gradual learning experience for everybody. I think that no two people are going to have the same path to the top, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think that two people are ever going to learn the same tricks at the same times in the same speed. And, you know, they're also not going to get as good at the movement in the same amount of time. You know, they're not going to be practicing the same amount in the same way with the same efficiency. Everybody's journey to the next level is always going to look very different, and it's going to be very personalized. So you have to realize, like, if you feel like you've hit a plateau with just the tricks that you're able to accomplish and the movement that you're able to do, typically it just means that you need to invest some more time. And that's why where I say, like, avoiding the burnout by changing a category is a really good idea, because if it's something that you're not seeing, it could just very well be that your movement's not very clean. So if you play a different category for a little while, you're still playing the game. When you come back, suddenly a key unlocks and you might be 30 seconds a minute faster just because you've been playing the game, but not like burning out on the specific path that you've been taking for so long. So that's something to consider, is that it could be very invisible to you and you just don't know about improving because you're kind of getting frustrated with not improving at the rate that you want. So diverting your focus, coming back later, you might be doing better. And then the other thing is kind of what I said earlier about tricks. Like, everybody's going to learn tricks at their own rate, depending on their skill level and depending on what they're good at, right? Like, not every trick is built the same way. Like, if a trick involves you clipping into a wall using like an edge, it's going to be a different execution than, say, clipping into a wall using a moon, right? Like, the functionality of those two clips are very different. And depending on your skill and depending on what you're good at, maybe you're a very visual learner. So that late clip that I'm talking about, clipping into the edge, you know, is basically just about figuring out where Mario is and then throwing Cappy out and coming through the wall. Like, if visual learning is your thing, you might be good at that one, but you might not be good at timing, which is what the moon clips require, right? So you have to gauge yourself and you have to realize, you know, if it's not worth going for yet, it's not worth going for yet. Consistency is always the most important thing. But if you are hitting a plateau, maybe it's time to divert some of your practice time into something that you're not doing yet, right? Like, look at somebody who's maybe a minute or two faster than you are and say, what are they doing that I'm not? Can I do that thing? If I can't do that thing, maybe I'll leave it for later. Maybe I'm not quite there yet. But if I can do that thing, maybe I'll start throwing it into speedruns. And I think that can be a frustrating thing. I know that it can be really like intimidating to put something new into your speedrun because you assume that you're going to lose a speedrun or two to it, right? I think that's inevitable. It's like, okay, I added this thing. If I get it, I save 10 seconds. If I miss it, it back to the beginning. You know, that's kind of a defeating thing to think. But, you know, the more that you kill your speedrun to that thing, the more automated it's going to become later on, right? It's kind of like a growing pains type of thing. You just kind of have to push through the pain at the beginning to make it easier for yourself in the end. Mm-hmm. And, you know, growth is all about progress. It's all about learning what you can do. You got to take your time with it, but you also do kind of have to push through and tell yourself that you can do it and have that perseverance to keep going. So,
yeah, I love what you just said. That, like, when you want to, like, progress or achieve anything in a more serious way, there will always be failure combined with it, because we are humans. We can't do everything we want to do right away. And to go through that failure and look at it as a learning experience, I think, is really helpful in anything in life, but also for speedrunning. So yeah, don't be frustrated and just keep doing the thing. Even though it seems like hard or impossible or annoying for you, it's like everybody has to do it in some way or the other. Yeah.
Don't be afraid of failure. That's a very good point to make. Like, people, they come into my stream and sometimes they watch me for an hour or two. They realize that I've probably reset the run about 10, 15, 20 times. And they ask me questions like, well, how are you not like completely raging over this right now? It's like, I don't know. This is a speedrunner mentality. Like, in order to get good at this, you just kind of have to accept the failures for what they are. And like, if you know what's wrong with what you're doing, then you can make the adjustment next time to fix it. And if you don't know what's wrong, that's when you take it back to the practice room and you figure out what did go wrong. Like, it's not about being upset that you keep failing, because you know that it's all in a pursuit of succeeding eventually, right? Mm. The payout of that victory is eventually going to be worth all of the effort that you're putting into it now.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Actually, funny that you mentioned, like, or partly mentioned one thing I want to ask in the end, because now my last question, and it's a serious question mixed with a meme fun question. But first of all, I would love you to sum up how, if someone like listens to this episode and is like, man, SMO sounds awesome, I want to get into speedrun, I have a Switch, I have this game, I want to play it. What do they need to do to get into the speedrun? Where do they need to go? Where do they find the resources? And then second, because I want to know this personal interest-wise, resets or no reset runs in SMO, yes or no, and why and when? Like, if you understand the question, because, yeah, just try to answer it.
For sure. Okay, sorry, so resources first. The number one resource for Super Mario Odyssey is probably the Discord. If you go to speedrun.com/SMO, there's a panel on the left side that's got a bunch of resources. If you click the Discord one, you'll be connected to over 10,000 people who are all involved in Super Mario Odyssey speedrunning. There's channels in there devoted to the specific categories themselves. So if you're looking to get into any percent or world peace or category extensions, each one of those has their own channels with a bunch of pinned information, routing, tricks, all that kind of stuff, tutorials, all that. Super Mario Odyssey Discord. The second resource, probably just as important in my opinion, is the Super Mario Odyssey directory on Twitch. There are people speedrunning the game all the time, 24 hours a day. And by being involved with them and talking to them and getting involved with what they're doing, you know, you build up a mutual interest together and you help each other get better at the game just by being involved in the communities. And if you ever have questions, you have somebody to turn to. Nobody can do this kind of hobby by themselves. It just doesn't work. So those are the two main resources. That's where you got to go. Of course, speedrun.com has the leaderboard if you're interested in watching specific runs. Like I said, it can be valuable to like watch somebody's run who's like maybe a couple steps ahead of you to see what they're doing. You know, speedrun.com has literally over 1,000 on the any percent leaderboard. So you can take a look there, figure out what you need to do. Now, no resets versus resets. Very good question. And I think that it really depends. I think it, like, this is where tools are very important. So if you're a speedrunner, you're probably very familiar with Live Split. I think that resets are the thing that you do when you know that you can PB 100%. They're the thing that you do when you know that the PB is inevitable and you're just pushing to get there. No resets are the kind of thing that you want to do if you are just looking to build your consistency in the stuff that you're already doing. So maybe you've just included you know, maybe two or three new tricks into the run, or maybe you've got a movement optimization that you've learned and you're just looking to implement that across the entire run, but you're not very consistent at it yet. You're not very good at that yet because, you know, it's hard to do. You know, you haven't really built up the muscle memory for it yet. I think doing no resets in a situation like that is very valuable because it allows you to come up with backups on the fly. Like, you don't have a choice. It's like, if, for example, you have a trick and you need to do the trick in, you know, in a regular setting, you would probably just reset if you missed it. But if you force yourself past that and you say, well, if I fail it, what do I do? It trains your mental capacity to be able to come up with backups. And I think that the backup strategy is very underrated and kind of overlooked.
It is.
You know, if the top runners don't always spit out their PBs, right? They make mistakes. Every speed run is bad. It's just that some speed runs are less bad than others. I think that was a Samurai Man quote, but that's just it, right? So, like, you know, you can't expect to achieve the perfection of what you can do every single run. And that's where a backup comes in. You know, you have to learn how to save yourself. And that's where no resets come in really well, because if you are implementing a bunch of new stuff and you make the mistake, then if you don't allow yourself to reset, you can learn how to fix the mistake. And then your consistency will improve as a result of that. And if you make the mistake again, you know the backup all of a sudden, so you're not losing nearly as much time as if you didn't have anything and you just hit the reset button again, right? So resets are for, like, when you feel your proficiency is here, your consistency is here, and you're just grinding for that PB. But if you are, like, if you've got some stuff on the works that you're adding in, your fundamentals are improving because you're trying to get to the next level, no resets can help because they'll build that consistency by learning backups and stuff. So
Cool. Well, I heard everything I want to hear. Thank you for being here for these two episodes recorded. I think we are good to go. Thank you all for listening, and see you in the next episode. Goodbye, everybody.
Take care. Thank you.
I had so much fun recording these with Dangerous, and I hope you had also fun listening to them. I find these two episodes, the last two, were really, really awesome, and they are a nice package of, like, general information, but also motivation for how to start speedrunning Super Mario Odyssey, for example. Dangerous is an awesome guy, so please do me a favor and check him out on YouTube and on Twitch. I linked everything down in the description. I'm personally now motivated to eventually start, at some point, my Mario Odyssey speedrunning journey. Hope something similar happens to you. As always, subscribe to this podcast if you don't want to miss a new episode, or check out my stream where we can talk about similar topics and where these podcasts are getting recorded on if you want to talk with us. Me and Dangerous talked a little bit with the chat, and it was really, really cool. We had a little bit of out of context thoughts on speedrunning that were not included in the episode. If you don't want to miss that, check out my stream. Links are in the description. See ya in the next episode.